Hi there, my name is Bryce Rankins, and you're listening to episode 9.5 of Sneaky Geek.
Sorry, I'm coming around. Hang on. Wait. Coming around and wait.
That was like, so I've been rewatching all the Marvel stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I just finished Thor 2.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, Thor's funny, but he's not
clever.
That's, yeah. Yeah, he's not, he's a smart ass, but he's not forcing the smart ass. Not that he's forcing it, but yeah, the clever part is, yeah. Which really sucks, because Chris Hemsworth is funny as hell. So it's kind of, not kind of sad, but it kind of sucked that they didn't take that into account with the first two movies.
Mm-hmm.
When they just kind of...
Well, they barely knew him at that point.
That's
like,
true.
He had done one movie when he was cast as Thor, and that movie hadn't even really been... Like, one movie that was really big, and it hadn't even been released yet. They didn't release Red Dawn until... After Thor.
Yeah, and he did that. Oh no, Red Dawn was years?
Yeah, it was filmed like in 2007.
That's right. He was in Star Trek for 5 seconds.
Yeah, and he was in Star Trek. So like, he had proven himself like worthy of like big stuff. Worthy. Generally speaking, like he's definitely different in that movie than I think they were even, than he might have even been aware.
Plus like the directors were completely different.
Yeah. Oh, hey, welcome to Sneaky Geek.
Hey, when did you guys get here?
It seemed like as good a time as any. Yeah, that was good commentary, right? Yeah. So why don't I just go with it? Hey, dudes, we are here at a lovely special, episode 9.5.
9.5.
If you remember, we did episode 9 about Thor Ragnarok and how we felt about it, and we had some further reading, but we thought that maybe we could go deeper.
Ooh.
I don't know that I like that sound after I say that sentence. I went over to Dave, and we got a little bit of extra stuff, so here that is.
Enjoy!
Hi everybody, my name is Bryce Rankins, and I'm joined on this quick, short, special episode with Dave Ziegler.
Hi!
Jazz hands.
Every time.
So... Today, I wanted to have a quick follow-up conversation regarding Thor Ragnarok, which we did last week, as of the time of recording this, about just what else we could have gotten from our conversation between Brian and I. I know we talked about several Ragnarok-related stories and kind of how they developed that concept clear up until the Ragnarok happening and disassembled.
Yes.
And I figured you probably had some intrinsic knowledge we might have missed, as well as maybe some further reading for those who want to kind of go beyond what we talked about in the podcast.
As it turns out, I do. I want to say, first of all, that B-Rom did a great job with his research.
Oh, yeah.
There was just a couple of things that he missed, because we're dealing with 50 years worth of material here.
Right.
And so it's understandable. But when he starts off with that Thor 127, 128, the hammer and the Holocaust... Mm-hmm. That's some good storytelling.
Really?
Jack and Stan are at the height of their powers, if
nice.
You will. You know, it's magnificent. And I think that's where we get the introduction of Hercules into the Marvel Universe.
Oh, cool. I love Hercules.
Because Thor and Hercules have this kind of, we're buddies, but we're rivals thing going.
Yeah.
And it's a lot
like
of
we're
fun.
Friends, but we play for different teams.
Yeah.
But our teams are both, you know... here to have a good time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think Hercules is more of the party boy, but, you know, Thor is like, come on, bro, we got to kind of...
Bring it in a little bit.
They're kind of like kid and play.
Okay.
Is that too dated a reference?
It is.
I'm going to go with it anyway.
Please, for our audience, explain.
Kid and play were a rap duo from the late 80s, early 90s. House Party... House Party 2, Pajama Jammy Jam. If you watch either of those movies, you'll get the sense of Kid and Play.
Gotcha.
So.
Kid and Play. Okay.
Anyway,
Thor and Hercules.
So, but, you know, the the story with where Thor fights the Midgard Serpent. I just picked that up recently. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I got it because he's duking it out with the Midgard Serpent.
Right, and the death of the Midgard Serpent marks the beginning of the Ragnarok problems, right?
Well, not exactly.
Oh.
See, in the original mythology, that's part of Ragnarok, but it happens when Loki engineers the death of Baldur.
Right.
Okay, and Odin imprisons Loki, you know, and he's tortured. But this really is where Loki goes from being the god of mischief to evil.
Gotcha.
And Loki leads the armies of the dead at Ragnarok.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, and Ragnarok is the battle between good and evil. Yes, it's a cycle, but it's the twilight of the gods. And everybody dies.
Yeah.
Thor dies fighting the Midgard Serpent. They kill each other. Tyr, the god of war, whom we don't really see much in the comics, dies fighting the Fenris Wolf.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I really like Tyr. Is it Tyr or Tyr?
I've heard it both ways.
Okay.
So.
He was a really fascinating part of everything leading up toward Siege.
Okay.
See,
I've not read Siege. I read some of the beginning issues of that Thor series, mm-hmm. where Asgard is parked over Brockton, Oklahoma. Right?
I think it's Broxton.
Broxton. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's Broxton, I'm almost positive.
Okay. I'll go with that. But anyway, and so we've got but Odin dies, you know, Loki dies.
Yeah.
Everybody dies. And depending on who's telling the story, either the cycle starts again. Or there are two survivors, a single man and a single woman. Adam and Eve.
Oh. So the death of the gods, so begins the Genesis.
Right. Actually, interestingly, because, you know, Jack Kirby was one of the creative visions behind the original Thor. We've talked in other podcasts about Kirby leaving Marvel.
Yeah, he leaves shortly after the story. Within a couple of years, right?
No, it's the 70s, late 60s, early 70s when he finally says, I'm out, had enough.
Is 120, what's it?
It's closer to the early 60s.
Okay, so this is the heyday. This is the Stan and Jack show.
Yes. And
featuring Steve.
When Kirby goes over to DC and does the New Gods, the very first page of the New Gods, there was a time when the old gods died. It's Ragnarok. The New Gods spin out of Ragnarok, Asgard, the end of the Nine Realms.
We should do a whole episode on the New Gods and the Old Gods because I'm actually very confused about that. But that's the DC side.
We can do that.
I think we should.
We can come around to that.
Especially if we're moving towards Darkseid and the other.
Okay.
Because that is something that was one of the hardest parts about Final Crisis is I have no idea what the hell the New Gods are.
Okay.
So, anyway. So Kirby goes over there and does this.
Yeah. So the Midgard Serpent, you know, that issue that B-Ron was talking about from Roy Thomas, basically what the gods keep doing through the Marvel series is kicking the Ragnarok can down the road.
Right.
Now, Walt Simonson has a landmark run on Thor. It is generally considered, if not the best run since Stan and Jack, it is probably in the top three
runs of
conversation. It's in the conversation for top run of all time.
Wow.
And certainly in the top three. And he does a Ragnarok story complete with, and he opens the and he's playing the long game here. And we get this one page of, you know, we're kind of zooming in on Muspelheim, which was one of the nine realms, you know, where Surtur, the fire demon, lives and all that. And, you know, he slaps this, pulls his sword out of the fire, slaps it on an anvil, drops the hammer on it, and the sound effect is doom. Just big, ringing doom.
Wow. Oh.
So he's forging something, and shit's going to get real here at some point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so as we hit kind of the midpoint of his run, you know, we get to Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And Malekith the Accursed opens up, you know, cracks open the Casket of Ancient Winters, which not only affects Asgard, but it affects all the other realms, including Midgard. And that's reflected in the other Marvel comics of the time. Fantastic Four, the Avengers. There's even a sequence in one of the Spider-Man issues where Spidey's swinging through a snowy scene going, man, what's with this crazy snow? It's June. You know, and so, which to me was my personal golden age of Marvel Comics, because I was you know, as a kid. Right. You know, and I loved those crossover moments.
Yeah.
But
where they're at least acknowledging what's happening in the other books.
Yes.
Nice to see that they got their shit together.
Yes, exactly. So Surtur has made his way to Asgard and he's ready to start dropping shit, you know. And Odin is like, no, no, bro, not today. And so Odin and Surtur duke it out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it is pimp. And they both kind of fall into this, what appears to be this bottomless chasm. And so now Thor and Loki are just kind of standing there, like, watching them fall, going, what do we do now? You know?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, God. And they kind of look at each other, and Loki's like, I'm not telling Mom. You know? But that's, you know, Simonson's big Ragnarok story, and it ends with Odin defeating Surtur.
A la the Gandalf... Fly, you fools.
Yes, you shall not pass, shall and not all pass. That sort of thing. And
Balrog story.
Right. And then...
And then he comes back as Odin the White.
Yeah. You know, and that's... You know, Odin stays gone for a couple years worth of stories.
Nice.
And then we get... The next major Ragnarok story is that Thor disassembled, which I picked that up in trade on a whim. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So good. To me, that was the best of the disassembled end of the Avengers sort of stories.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and because we finally get some character growth for Thor in ways that we hadn't seen.
Since Walt Simonson.
And even, yeah, I mean, since Simonson.
Even one of Thor?
One of the problems with the way comics are made today is it's all Road of Trials, you know. To use the Joseph Campbell term. It's all act two.
Yeah.
You know, you get act one at the beginning, and then it's all act two after that. Because right. You never get act three. The characters can't have any real change. There's the illusion of change. You know, there's changes to the status quo. There's changes to this or that aspect. But there's no real change to the characters.
Right.
Because you got to protect the intellectual property.
Yeah.
Got to protect the trademark. Yeah. You know, you can change the toys, but you can't change them so much you break them.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, they still need to be able to get back into the box.
Right.
Okay.
You know, and really, to me, there's only two series that successfully do Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3. You know, and they're DC books. My favorite, all time, forever and always, Starman. James Robinson, Tony Harris, Peter Snedgeberg.
So this is a podcast, and... I just want everybody to know that we have at least four large posters of Starman, whether they be fan art or otherwise, and several figurines and action figures also of Starman, because his dedication is real. Carry on.
The other is Neil Gaiman's Sandman. Morpheus at the end.
So this is a podcast, and you can't necessarily see, but along with the Starman posters, there are Sandman posters, and there were at one point both of those within his classroom.
Yes. The Starman posters are still there. The Sandman poster is not.
Sandman was there when I was in your class. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Sandman, Starman.
Because both Jack Knight, our protagonist in Starman, and Morpheus, the Dream Lord, our protagonist in Sandman, are radically different people, characters, whatever, by the time they get to the end of the story, from where they were at the beginning. They're allowed to grow and change.
Sure. So how does Thor's disassembled book attempt this?
Well, Thor finally recognizes, hey, yes.
We're kicking the can.
We've been kicking this can. And B-Rom talks about this a little bit.
Yeah. You know, in his song. We talked about this in the other podcast.
We've kicked this can and we have done irreparable damage. Maybe not irreparable damage, but we have done grievous harm to the universe.
And the universe is fighting back. It's one of the things that we talked about.
Right.
In ours.
And
the universe is killing gods off.
And Thor has to take the throne. He has to become King of Asgard. Which is something he has actively avoided throughout all the runs up to that point. And so he's like, I have some larger responsibilities here. We're going to do what we can. And the sequence where he's evacuating Asgard, he and the surviving Asgardians are just riding through this wasteland.
Oh, man.
You know, and Thor's like, yeah, we just got to keep going.
He's Moses.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not going to get to a promised land.
Yeah, exactly. And so I really, you know, when we watched Ragnarok, I saw him, that sequence of him, we got to evacuate the city.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, damn, they're going there. All right, cool. I'm digging it. Because just like in Disassembled, Thor is like, okay, I got to take on this responsibility. I don't want it, but I got to do it because who else is going
to? And that does carry over into later Thor issues as well. Because when Thor comes back, he is the king until Loki manages to oust him on a technicality.
Right.
When he brings back Odin's father, Bor. And has him go crazy, and Thor ends up accidentally killing him in the process of fighting him, thinking that he's a demon of some sort. And then he's like, oh, Thor, you technically, Bor would have been king if he was alive, which means you technically killed the king, which means we have to banish you. Sorry.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's, it, and then of course, Baldur winds up becoming the king.
Yeah.
And Loki does the whisperings, and then
which is a and Baldur as king is a throwback to Simonson's run, because at one point, Baldur is the regent. In Odin's absence.
Oh, cool.
So,
is this after the fall?
This is... Yeah, I think it's after the fall.
Cool. So that's... Those are the main stories for Thor regarding that. I would absolutely highly recommend the aftermath of when Thor comes back leading up to Siege. Definitely to you, because that... Did you read the run of just everything leading up to Journey into Mystery with Loki
as a woman? I did not, but I read Journey into Mystery... And liked it a lot.
Yeah. Kid Loki is my favorite Loki.
I can see why.
Yeah. You know, at the end of Siege, I really appreciated it because they did go back to that old, you know, Loki isn't evil. He's mischievous. Mm-hmm. He wants chaos. He has a compulsion for chaos.
Right.
And when he sees Asgard, you know, collapsing into the ground at the hands of Bob Reynolds, he's like, this isn't what I wanted. This isn't. And they're like, why did you do it then? He goes, because it's who I am.
It's what I do.
You know, he's the scorpion and the fox or the frog or whatever story, whichever animal the scorpion's climbing on up to cross the river.
Right.
So are there any other recommended readings for Thor? We've got the Walt Simonson run. We've got, well, let's go in order. We've got the Jack and Stan 1960s original Ragnarok stories, which includes Thor number...
127, 128, The Hammer and the Holocaust. And here's the thing for me. Stan and Jack, you can go anywhere in that in their run, and it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And particularly the Tales of Asgard backup stories that they did. So good. Yeah. So anyway, so the Stan and Jack stuff, you can go anywhere on there.
Okay.
But again, particularly the Hammer and the Holocaust.
Yeah. Our most relevant is Hammer and the Holocaust story.
I don't know if the Midgard Serpent issue had been collected yet. You know, we've talked about those epic collections.
Right.
I think that's in one of those segments that hasn't been collected.
Was the Midgard Serpent one issue, or was it an arc?
No, they didn't do arcs back then. They did mostly done in one or maybe two parters with subplots.
Okay.
You don't get a lot of subplots these days.
No.
So, you know, because you're basically writing these six issue arcs.
Right.
So there's that. The Simonson stuff has been collected into, I think it's Thor Visionaries or Thor by Walt Simonson, depending on which.
Available at Barnes & Noble's, Amazon, or on Comixology?
Yes. In fact, I think they're still on sale on Comixology.
Oh, cool.
So,
because Thor just came out. That would make sense.
So there's that. Thor Disassembled. And I've been reading the Jason Aaron run on Thor with the female Thor.
Oh, yeah.
So
the Thor storyline.
Yeah. Now I can't remember if it was because they did the current series of the Mighty Thor started after the Secret Wars event.
Right.
But there was a like 8 issues I think of Thor featuring this version of Thor before Secret Wars. And I can't remember if that was also called the Mighty Thor.
I'm not entirely sure. I know
that it was... But you can look it up.
There was definitely a question at that time as to who was this new Thor.
And I'm not saying anything about it because I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
Because the mystery of who this character is coming out of the original Sin storyline of the original Sin crossover event was so well done.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it had tied into that.
Well, at the end of Original Sin, Nick Fury whispers something in Thor's ear, in Odin's son's ear.
Yeah.
And we don't know what it is. And suddenly, Thor can't lift the hammer. And this is all taking place on the moon.
Oh, man.
And Thor can't lift the hammer.
He's unworthy.
He is no longer worthy.
Have you read Thor the Unworthy? That recently came out about a year ago?
I have not, but I've... It's on my list of things to acquire because Jason Aaron wrote that as well.
Gotcha.
So I think that's going to turn out to be part of the overarching thing that he's doing here.
Great. So Jason Aaron's run,
yeah,
gives you some more information as far.
Well, he starts with the Odin son and writes him for some time, and you know.
And this has little to do with the Ragnarok storyline at all.
Almost
but
nothing.
But it does give you really, really good modern telling of Thor.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there was the disassembled book.
Yes, I think I mentioned that.
Yep.
And yeah, so those are good places to start. You know, and the nice thing about, you know, these ongoing adventures is, in a lot of ways, you don't really need you to start at the beginning. You can't start at the beginning. You know, you can pick and choose. You know, if Disassembled sounds more interesting, go there. If The Mighty Thor sounds more interesting, go there. You know,
yeah.
If Walt Simonson's your jam, by the way, let me circle back around for 1 second because I want to throw one more bit out there. Walt Simonson's doing a book called Ragnarok that is unofficially a continuation or extension of his run on Thor, in that it takes place after Ragnarok. And it is clearly Thor, but it is not Marvel Thor. It is traditional Norse god, Viking rock and roll Thor.
Nice.
Dark elves, you know, Ratatosk, the squirrel that
he's
lives in
right
the
now?
Tree. Yeah, from Boom Studios.
I love Boom Studios.
Mm-hmm.
That's super cool.
Yes.
All right. Can we talk real quick about Hulk?
Yeah.
Is there anything regarding the Hulk storyline that is, like, had Hulk ever been a gladiator before Planet Hulk?
Well, not exactly.
Is there a pinnacle Hulk being in charge and Bruce Banner being locked in the trunk storyline?
Oh, yeah. How much time you got?
Let's try to get it about 5 minutes.
So one of the things that came out, you know, originally, you know, obviously Hulk is, you know, Jekyll and Hyde.
Right.
You know, Banner's the intellect, Hulk is the rage. And at some point, I think it was either Bill Mantlo or John Byrne who really started looking at the question of why Hulk's so angry.
Hmm.
And of course, the punchline is, well, because his pants are too tight. But in one of those stories, it comes out that Bruce had been abused as a child by his father.
Oh.
And that's where that rage comes from.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So then Peter David takes over, and he had a phenomenal run on Hulk. I mean, it lasted for, I think it was over a decade.
Wow.
You know, well, and when he took it over, sales were, nobody cared what he did. So
yeah.
He could take some risks. You know, he could and did change a lot of things about Hulk. You know, at one point, you know, originally the Hulk was gray.
Right.
In the original comics because of a printing error. You know, and so he's like, well, wait a minute. Why don't we bring that back? You know, so for a while, the Hulk was gray, living in Las Vegas as a mob enforcer.
Mr. Fix-It.
Mr. Fix-It, that's right.
I have a Mr. Fix-It trading card.
I had a Mr. Fix-It action figure at one point.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, but then he segues away from that and does a lot of cool shit. But the point that he comes to is what some fans refer to as the Professor Hulk. The Hulk's body, Banner's brain.
Kind of like Maestro.
That story actually happens during this time of the Hulk.
Okay.
You know, that Future Imperfect storyline.
Right.
Is that it? Future Imperfect?
I don't know.
Yes, it is Future Imperfect.
Okay. During
Peter David and George Perez. Beautiful. And brutal.
Oof.
Yes. But definitely worth hunting down. Future Imperfect, the Hulk. And, you know, while he's in this state, you know, he's running a kind of an action think tank, an action science think tank called the Pantheon.
Okay.
Which was pretty fun. And I've kind of gotten away from actually answering your question and talking about cool Hulk shit. So,
yeah. But the Pantheon's kind of like the leaders group with Mojo and, or not Mojo, but MODOK and...
No, the Pantheon is actually based on Greek mythology. And there's some question over the course of the story as to whether or not these are the actual, if not the actual Greek heroes and gods, then reincarnations of the Greek heroes and gods.
Wow.
So, you know, some cool stuff there.
Okay, so we've got more information on Thor. Mm-hmm. We've got more information on Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have anything from Starlin era or something that leads us to the Collector and his brother?
The Grandmaster?
The Grandmaster, yeah. Oh, heads up. The Collector and the Grandmaster, they don't really establish it in the film, but in everything else, it's been pretty well accepted and pointed out that they are siblings.
Yes. The first Contest of Champions miniseries from 82, I think, from 1982, is a fairly pivotal Grandmaster Collector story.
Yeah. They're both blue, right? Yeah,
I think that's the case.
Yeah, they're both, that's right, because I remember watching something about the Grandmaster's makeup and the Collector's makeup were both minimalist versions of what they were originally supposed to look like, and I have seen artwork from this storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, carry on.
And one of the things, as a side note, one of the things that I liked about that story was that there are all these international heroes, some of whom had been introduced in other stories, a couple of them from the Hulk.
Yeah.
You know, Sabra from Israel, the Arabian Knight from Saudi Arabia were introduced in Hulk. But then you've got other characters like Shamrock, Le Peregrin, that were introduced...
But not Batroc the Leaper?
Not Batroc the Leaper. that were introduced for this story.
Okay.
You know, for this Contest of Champions. There was also an Avengers, West Coast Avengers annual crossover that... And I was not prepared for that.
Kind of question. Like Justice League and Justice Society?
Yeah, that where they cross over in the annuals as pawns of the Grandmaster and the Collector, and they duke it out there as well.
Okay, so their contest is actually between the two of them?
Yes. Well, their contests are always between the two of them, except they don't do it directly.
No, they have champions.
They have champions.
They have a contest of champions.
So
okay, so this Contest of Champions concept, which when the game Contest of Champions came out, they really featured the Collector in there as if the Collector was kind of helping orchestrate it, but they always had him against someone like Kang the Conqueror or something like that. But I guess, you know, with the Grandmaster not being introduced into the MCU yet, you wouldn't want to have that happen.
Right.
Okay. So the Grandmaster and the Collector have a story, an original Contest of Champions story.
Mm-hmm.
Does it run as Contest of Champions or was it
called Marvel Superheroes Contest of Champions?
And it's its own book.
3-issue miniseries.
Isn't that the best?
Mm-hmm.
I love when they do events in their own self-contained book.
Well, back in the idea of, and I know this is slightly off topic, but the idea of an event series with 47 crossover miniseries and crossover issues.
And all of the other fun marketing
all that nonsense is pretty recent, within the last 10 or 15 years.
Okay.
Initially, when you did an event miniseries,
you had somebody write the book.
Right. And Crisis on Infinite Earths has these kinds of crossover things, but the scope of what they were doing was large.
Yeah.
And unlike what we see a lot of today, you actually didn't have to buy the crossovers. If you bought the Crisis on Infinite Earths main series, you got the entire story.
Right.
Everything else was frosting. You know, it was nice. It's nice if you got it, but you don't need it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you'll get through the main story. The rest is all just add-on fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So the original Contest of Champions is three books, one self-contained story.
Yep.
And then did they come back and do another contest anytime later?
They did 90s? A sequel in the 90s, Contest of Champions 2. I didn't read that because 90s Marvel, there were some problems.
Some pouches, some hair.
Yeah. So I cannot speak with any sort of authority on that one.
Gotcha.
But spinning out of the Secret Wars event a couple of years ago, there was a Contest of Champions book. I read that on Comixology because there was a sale, 99 cents an issue.
Yep.
And it was really good.
Cool.
It was really interesting because unlike the original Contest of Champions series where all the champions are from Marvel Earth, you know, Earth 616.
Right.
In this Contest of Champions series after the Secret Wars, it's from across the Marvel multiverse.
Oh, okay.
So the Maestro is a character. Punisher 2099 is a character. You know, I think Ultimate Spider-Man is in there somewhere.
Oh, wow.
You know, so there's different characters from different, you know, Marvel parallel dimensions.
Okay.
And it was a lot of fun.
Cool. Okay, so there you have it. You've got Jack Kirby and Stan Lee's Thor.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Walt Simonson's Thor.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the disassembled storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And for more delightful quality Thor goodness, you've got the original Mighty Thor run after Ragnarok, as well as the current Mighty Thor run by Jason Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Planet Hulk, of course. World War Hulk was an excellent finisher to that. Planet Hulk is also a really high quality animated film if you're not in the mood to read. I love the animated film. I have not seen it. It's very good. It's very good. It's very true to its source material, which is nice.
I like that.
It is, and then after that, we've also got Hulk's
Future Imperfect.
Future Imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one other Hulk storyline.
I didn't cite a specific storyline, but because Peter David does, you know, he's playing a long game here.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but all of his stuff has been collected in the Hulk Visionaries, Peter David.
Okay, trades. Peter David's runs on the Hulk.
Yes.
Can also give you some more insight into this idea that Hulk isn't just a rage machine that doesn't speak.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got the original Contest of Champions,
mm-hmm.
possibly Contest of Champions 2 if you're interested, as well as a more recent Contest of Champions third one that came out within the last 15 years or so.
No, this is within the last 2 or 3 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I'm talking about this...
This is before Secret Wars, though.
Marvel has used the Secret Wars title for several events.
Right.
There's the original Secret Wars, Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars, in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
There's Secret Wars 2 in 1988, I think.
Okay.
Then Brian Michael Bendis writes an event, you know, a miniseries called Secret War, which is...
That's Nick Fury's Secret War.
Right.
Great story.
It's kind of its own thing. It does not cross over with the larger Marvel Universe at all.
No.
And then...
It is actually secret.
Yeah. And then, 2015, we get Secret Wars, which is kind of the culmination of what Jonathan Hickman had been doing with his Avengers runs.
Right.
So this
there had been hints at it for years.
Yeah, Hickman...
There's one hint at it where it's just a guy being shoved in a police station, and it's a man dressed up as the Carol Danvers Miss Marvel, and he's screaming out, "Everything's converging, everything will end." And it's this weird throwaway line of some crazy person in the police station, but that was at least 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hickman writes these
multi-year runs. He's a big idea guy. You know, his Fantastic Four and FF series were really great,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so, but this Secret Wars series in 2015 was the culmination of what Hickman had been doing in the Avengers books.
Gotcha.
And kind of plays off a couple of things that he brings up initially in the Fantastic Four run. But so this last Contest of Champions book that I was talking about spins out of that Secret Wars.
Oh, okay. Event. So it's kind of one of the Secret Wars event was basically a year of what if issues.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean
for a year of what if issues for a 9-issue series, yeah, basically.
Yeah. A really, really my one of my favorites and a really good example of alternate Hulk situations mm-hmm. is Planet Hulk's.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 6-issue arc with an alternate reality Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
With alongside Devil Dinosaur,
mm-hmm.
and the two of them are on the hunt for Bucky.
Yep.
And they are accompanied by a Hulk
mm-hmm.
On their way to the Red Hulk through mm-hmm. the land of Hulks.
Yep.
So that they can eventually fight Red Hulk and get Bucky out of Hulkland with the Hulks.
Yep.
And all of the Hulked monsters and every other Hulk thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hulk, 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 Hulk.
Oh, one other...
That would be my recommendation right. for if you want more
I
Hulks.
Have one other... story that the Hulk is, I don't know if I'd say he's not a main player, but I think he's, I would say he's an important player.
Okay.
Old Man Logan.
Oh.
The first Old Man Logan story from Mark Miller and Steve McNiven. Mm-hmm. Steve McNiven? I think it's McNiven. Yeah.
Mark Miller. Yeah. Good stuff. And old, yeah, that Old Man Logan series is definitely worth your time.
Yes. Now, not to be confused with the Old Man Logan ongoing series.
No.
Also spinning out of Secret Wars.
Yeah. Okay. No, the original Old Man Logan story shows a really bleak future for most of the Marvel Universe. Pretty much
everybody, yeah. But you can get that as a trade paperback or on Comixology.
Yep.
As well. So.
So, there we have it. I don't know that there's a whole lot more that we can go on, but I think we've got pretty much all your information for further readings and other ways you can explore the Ragnarok area. One more shout out to the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. That time is coming.
Yes.
That ship that shows up at the end of Thor Ragnarok is definitely Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing who Thanos is and the lead up around Starlin's Infinity Gauntlet is really, really high quality. And one of my favorite 90s comics.
Can I make one observation?
By all means.
Okay. So the one of the things that I saw during Comic-Con, and I didn't get a chance to get it, but Marvel and B-Rom is probably, if he's not talked to you about this, you can ask him about it. But Marvel had this big-ass poster. It's basically an Infinity War poster leading up to the movie. Thanos is, we got our first big, you know, image of Thanos, you know, because he's always been kind of passing through.
Yeah.
You know, we get, and everybody in the MCU is in this poster. And when I watched Ragnarok, I better throw a spoiler alert in here.
We're already past that.
Okay. When I watched Ragnarok and Hela dug out Thor's eye, I thought, how did they hide that on the, how is that not spoiled on the poster? So after I saw that, when I got home, I looked up, I found the poster online. They've got Thor in profile so that his good eye is the one facing, is the side that you get in the wow, image. So his jacked up eye is away from the camera. And I thought, man, that is so brilliant. Well done, Marvel. Golf claps for you, man.
That's pretty impressive. That's cool. I'm happy about that too, because I love when a good plan comes together. All right. Well, thanks, Dave. Appreciate you doing this quick 1.5.
And by
quick,
pleasure.
I mean an hour, but whatever.
That's all right. You can keep what you need, toss what you don't.
It'll be good. Thank you guys for listening again. Glad we could throw one of these in there.
Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Coming correct, we select on the set, bees behind the board, cold getting respect. We are getting played, getting played.
I'm made of rocks, as you can see, but don't let that intimidate you. You don't need to be afraid unless you're made of scissors. Unless you're made of scissors. Just a little rock, paper, scissors joke for you.
You'll feel the pain, yes. Soft and wet, yes, honey. You'll get it, but not just yet, right, money?
Yeah, listen to that, he's threatening me.
A pajama jammy jam.
The beat is live, true, so don't front on it. Get it while the getting's good and just jump on it.
Minute by minute,
yo, hour by hour.
Getting play got soul power, we getting funky.
Hey man, we're about to jump on that ginormous spaceship. You wanna come? Unless you're made of scissors.